This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dot.
Overseas, yeah, we trying to stop terrorism, but we still got terrorists here living in the USA, the big CIA, the Bloods and the Crips and the KKK. But if you only have love for your own race, then you only leave space to discriminate, and to discriminate only generates hate, and when you hate, then you're bound to get irate. Yeah, madness is what you demonstrate, and that's exactly how anger works and operates. Man, you gotta have love to set it straight. Take control of your mind and meditate. Let your soul gravitate to the love, y'all, y'all.
People killing, people dying, children hurt and even crying. When you practice what you preach, and what you turn the other cheek. Father, 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 help us. Send some guidance from above. These people got me questioning. Where is the love?
Strange, is the world insane? If love and peace is so strong, why are the pieces of love that don't belong? Nations dropping bombs, chemical gases filling lungs of little ones with ongoing suffering as the youth are young. So ask yourself, is the loving really gone? So I could ask myself, really what is going wrong in this world that we living in? People keep on giving in, making wrong decisions, only visions of them liberties, not respecting each other, denying thy brother. A war's going on, but the reason's undercover. The truth is kept secret, it's swept under the rug. If you never know truth, then you never know love. Where's the love, y'all? Come on,
I don't know.
Where's the truth, y'all? Come on,
I don't know.
Where's the love, y'all?
People killing, people dying, children hurt and crying. When you practice what you preach, and what you turn the other cheek. Father, 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 help us.
World on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Yeah. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive, love is found. Ask yourself,
where is the love? Where is the love? Where is the love? Father,
Father, Father,
help us.
Send
some guidance from above. People got me questioning. Where is the love?
Sing with me, y'all.
One word, one word. We only got one word, one word. That's all we got.
One word, one word.
Something's wrong with it. Yeah. Something's wrong with it.
Yeah.
Something's wrong with the good world, world. Yeah. We only got one word, one word. That's all we got. One word.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another beautiful day here in Hawaii. Looking out at the mountains, you'd really need to see this. They're draped in white clouds and the fog coming down. We won't call it fog. It's cloud and liquid sunshine, but absolutely beautiful. And this morning I have the Kahuku Plantation Community Association.
Residents Association.
And we're going to be talking about the recent news regarding the evictions and the buyout, the sellout, however you want to phrase it once. Hopefully they get an opportunity to share with you. And they are Glenn Maganoi, Stella Mulivai, John Errett, and Pake Tubal. I also have Mr. Tony Lucretio, the attorney for them, and they've asked him to come in and also provide some input, but we'll let them give you the greater details. But thanks for joining. And if you have a question or comment, please feel free to call. It's 524-1080. And those of you that have people that are interested in listening to this that don't have a radio range, go to carolcox.com, click on the Listen to Us on Air Live, and you can get us on the Internet live. You can also participate and send your emails if you have questions to carol@carolcox.com, and we'll be able to pick them up. Thank you. All right, Glenn, good morning, and all of you, welcome aboard.
Good morning. Aloha.
So if you would set the stage for us, what do we have here? What the Kahuku Plantation Residents Association, or KPRA, what's going on? We've seen it in the news, and there's some developments and some issues with the courts that you expressing have concerns with.
Just to give a brief history of what's been going on is that we was just a plantation village, a plantation lifestyle that wanted to be preserved and remain as course of history, that it would be recognized to anybody that visits Hawaii. Everybody says everything's whatever historic preservation.
Mm-hmm.
We're only fighting for that. I mean, if it was a jack-in-a-box, we wouldn't be fighting for it. But but we are a plantation village struggling for survival and identity. This is the last phase of our plantation identity within Kahuku.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been struggling with a company that's from based out of Florida, Continental Pacific. The newspaper once called them a vulture company that comes in and buys land and sits on it and then turn it for a big profit.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference of this property is they bought a piece of property with living, breathing entity that a plantation village lived on.
Mm-hmm.
Introduced to us by Mufi Hanneman in the past, saying that Mufi said that this entity would help us survive.
Now, when you say this entity, the company that purchased the land?
Continental Pacific.
Okay, so Hanneman conveyed to the public when they were trying to implement this or allow them to buy, he then said that they will do things to enhance your stay.
They would
and
come
preserve
in.
Your stay?
Yes, they would come in and help us preserve the plantation and build within us, with us. At first, they wanted to build 27 one-acre lots on the beachfront, which didn't come about because of it was preservation land,
mm-hmm.
and because they didn't make their money on the beachfront, they turned towards the community. And now they're trying to, instead of, as we were told, to help us, it seems as they were helping themselves to us.
So it didn't play out the way Hanneman had presented it?
Hanneman had introduced Continental Pacific, and it brought another a twist to the equation, which was Lex Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Lex Smith is is the council of Continental Pacific. And he is, just to make a note, that he was a campaign manager for Kurt Colwell.
But was he not also on the Ethics Commission appointed by Hanneman?
Yes.
So Hanneman invites Continental or introduces them to the equation, and then in turn, they have, in your opinion, as you convey, they have not been what he represented, he being Hanneman, and then subsequent, Lex Smith represents Continental?
Correct.
And then, but also Lex Smith was appointed to the Ethics Commission, but I think he resigned. Did he not remove himself? Or
once it was discovered, the relationship with Hanneman.
Right, once the relationship was brought out or made transparent to the public, then he then resigned, he being Rex Smith, or Lex Smith, there's a Rex Smith also. So now we're, Lex Smith is representing Continental.
Correct.
And so, just for a point, there sounds like this is an, for purpose of novelty, but this is your life, right? This, you're living there. This is your resident. Am I correct?
Yes, it
so
is.
Even though we say plantation and a living,
breathing entity,
this is a matter of life and death for you, or your quality of, this is your home, correct?
This is our home. This
yes.
is where we grew up. And this is a matter of, again, I thought everybody was into historic preservation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to preserve a community of plantation, mm-hmm. entity in our country setting out in Kahuku. Because in a country setting, Kahuku is the only plantation out there besides Wailua. But if you drive through La'ie, Kahuku is the only one of plantation identity. So we were all trying to preserve what we could. And thought that they would come in and build within us
mm-hmm.
if they were to help us.
Mm-hmm.
But they built through us. The first thing on the chopping block was two families that were requested or ordered to move because it was in the roadways.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to build within us, I mean, we all can work together. But all this bad hardship started at that time. They were awarded a permit, a building permit, to do roads and water. And as they were awarded to do the water lines and the roads, no one had told them to turn left and churn up all the vegetation in acres and acres of property that wasn't in the scope of their permit.
Mm-hmm.
Once you did that, you broke your permit.
Right.
So when they went into this area of a parcel, when they leveled all the vegetation, they unearthed Evie several times.
Mm-hmm.
And we as a community had exposed it to the broader community because it felt like it was being hidden from
mm-hmm.
the rest. So that's an issue that we can get into later, but... that's a biggie when you unearth Evie under the same time frame of the rail. The rail had exposed Evie and it was ordered to be shut down, to do an AIS.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't stop Continental. They pushed further. They pushed on.
So what did, speaking of Kapuna, Evie Kapuna, what did the DLNR Historic Preservation, were they notified, were they called, did they come make an assessment, did they intervene?
Let me put it this way. I was in town on a Saturday, and as the community people approached this plywood cylinder blocks and a cone,
mm-hmm.
they lift up the cone and they lift up the piece of wood and saw the skeleton, the skull, and they just freaked out and put it back down. protocol is usually that you would call the police to
mm-hmm.
see and investigate if it's a crime scene or an historic site.
Right.
But we called the police of the community, Kahuku Police Station. None of the police officers were aware of anything of such a report of skeletons within our backyards.
Mm-hmm.
So. It kind of made the community feel like, is there a hidden agenda? it only says as it what it's showing that nobody knew.
Mm-hmm.
They waited all day for someone to come, the police did, and all the way through the night, and no one came. So they eventually made a report, and Shipta came back and I guess made a report that was, I called the department, and I asked the person told them what they did, that they honored Evie, and shouldn't you come and protect the elements in the ground? And she said, what happened? And I said, well, our families went over there and saw the cone in the wood, and they lifted up. And as soon as I said that, she was threatening me by saying, you know, I can have your families arrested. I said, for what? For desecrating a grave. I said, I didn't know that was a grave. So the guys can bulldoze the grave, not going to get arrested or fines, but you're going to threaten me by having my families in prison because they just lift up a cone
and
again, a plywood?
Who is this person that tell you this? The lady? I mean, if she was there, I mean, it wasn't Casper the Friendly Ghost.
No.
So it was, if we're talking...
She used the name of Nona.
And she worked for the government, or who did she work for?
Shipta. Chuck Shipta.
Shipti.
Yeah.
State Historic Preservation.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, these are facts. That's what we're talking about, facts. And if she was there, she was there. Yeah. Unless what you're representing is not to be fact. I mean,
I had the call.
She can come and sue me if she liked to. Well, but I'd like to, for the listeners out there, we want clarity. So if they came and instead of working with you, they threaten you,
mm-hmm.
and say you were disturbing a gravesite.
Yes.
I didn't know the Hawaiian culture involved red cones, safety cones, when they did burials. I didn't, and plywood. I didn't know they.
Well, that's what I told Ms. Naboa, is that, how could our residents know that it was a burial site when you just put a piece of wood and a cone on top?
Mm-hmm.
And for you to tell me that you can have them arrested, threatening me instead of the ones that unearthed it and bulldozed it, and it's just, unbelievable.
Welcome to the world of Shipti and DLNR and government here in Hawaii. The victims tend to be the ones who's disciplined quickly. You get the first tongue lashing you ever had, the worst, in fact, from people that you're reporting crimes to. Welcome aboard.
Yeah. So I asked her, aren't you the department or the responsible party to protect the elements above the ground and within the ground? Aren't you here to fine people or for the violations that they do? And her comment was to me, well, he was in an area where he had no permits. And I was like, shouldn't you fine him even more so? Because he has no permits doing this, and he dug up, unearthed Evie, and you're just telling me that you're going to arrest my family instead of the bulldozer guy? It didn't make sense to me. But the catchy part is several days later, a word came from someone to them, to Shipti, and says that the residents are desecrating the graves. It was even said that I, Glenn Maganoy, was driving a bulldozer over our family's past generation's graves. Mm-hmm. I mean, why would we desecrate our family's graves?
Right.
I don't even know how to drive a bulldozer. So it was ordered that the archaeologists find that evening and dig it up and move it because we're threatening the burial of our generations. Soon as that Evie was removed, they came right in and started paving the flattening this land to make the roads and preparing for the roads immediately. That is,
Tony, this is what I've observed in many of these cases where Shipti or other state agencies, their escape hatch is, if they don't have a permit, they being a party that conducts or commits a possible violation, if they're not permitted, or the work occurs in a permitted area, the state tend to exempt itself or turn a cold shoulder because there's no conditions that they can say, well, you violated this condition of your permit. But the intent of SHPDI is to protect the Iwi, Iwi Kupuna, period, and the historical preservation, right?
Exactly.
So this is what we know now to be fact in the standard operation practice of state and city agencies, because if he didn't have a permit to do this, then they, in normal terms, should not have been working in that area and should have been called to the floor and explained and issued citations or legally addressed it through these agencies.
Exactly, because you do have a permit, like I said, for the road and the water. And that is exactly what your scope of work is supposed to be only.
Mm-hmm.
Once you did something other than that, you broke that permit that you already acquired.
Yeah, I got a question. I guess a caller here. We'll leave it. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, it seems like...
Turn your phone down, your radio other. Down, Ed.
It seems like... Jesus, every room is...
Is that Mufi Hanneman in the background?
Yeah,
okay.
I think so. I think he's checking up on me.
Okay.
But it seems like every project that goes on that the people who don't want the project are using Iwi as an excuse
mm-hmm.
to stop the project or put it on hold. Now, I think my family mentioned that they might have had Iwi under where Russian Rose sits off, because they had family many years ago in Halikawila Street. And they're happy that Russian Row is built and the Iwi are buried under there.
Okay.
Now, in the case of this Iwi, it was if I could identify it as family Iwi in this road here, I would tell them, could you bury it deeper than pave the road over it? Because that's where it was buried and it should remain there.
Right.
They're using it as an excuse to stop a project.
Now, well, Ed, I think that you're taking the liberty to... draw conclusions based on what you and your family feel. This is a simple fact. They're pointing out the way things unfolded and developed. So I think you can't. You don't know every project, so you know, and you're not going to get away with that.
Ed,
you cannot take a template because of your experience and then project on the whole world. You know, we ain't talking biblical terms. We're talking individual experiences. So let them finish their conversation. And
one last comment.
Go ahead, but, I just...
This island was populated by our Kapuna.
Right.
There's burials all over this island. You will find maybe up in Manoa or St. Louis Heights, when contractors built the homes there, they found Iwi, they just left it there and they covered it over.
Yeah.
Now it seems to be a stumbling block. That's why it costs the rail millions and millions more dollars.
Okay, let me draw this to a conclusion once and for all with you. This here's the way it is. If you have an issue with that, each time we discuss Iwi, it becomes part of a conversation. You call up with the same lame approach. If you think it is so important and that everyone is actually out there just lying and cheating and stealing their way to impede the progress of development, why don't you do this? And I think you'll soothe your soul. Call down and talk to your legislators and tell them to do away with the laws on the book that addresses this, because apparently the legislators believe that there's a reality that the Iwi Kupuna should be protected. So on that note, I'm going to conclude, but feel free to call back. But, you have to be...
What you
can't just call on every show and then say, draw the same... Every time we've talked about you, you come back with the same thing, and it's as if, well, we should just call you when we have problems, because that's what the rest of the world should do. And I don't mean to be disrespectful, but at some point, when you malign people in that fashion, like, okay, here's another group of people coming in to stop development. Listen to the entire conversation, and then you might go away with a different conclusion. It's not about the Iwi. It's about the willingness of an agency to come and respond So the police come to your house after you've been broken into, and they start to chastise you and say, well, you shouldn't have left your house alone. You should have left someone staying here while you were out shopping or whatever. You can't do that, and not on this show. I just don't live in cotton.
Well, one last question.
Go for it.
Do the people who live in these homes in the Kahuku Village own their homes?
Well, I don't
know.
I'll let them answer you. Go ahead.
Some of them do.
Okay. All righty. But anyway, go ahead. And this
should
is what's good about. Yeah, help yourself.
For one, I want to let you know that the project wasn't stopped. They never stopped.
Yeah.
They ran it and kept running.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to point out this, that even if you're trying to back them up, like we're just trying to stop the project. For one, you don't live where we live, so you don't know exactly what went on. You don't know exactly the accusation that they said that I drove a bulldozer driving it around like a crazy man.
Yeah.
What I want to point out to you, plain and simple, again, they had a permit, and the permit was to do the roads and the water. If they found the EV in the road and on the water in that project, we would make maybe a statement again.
Mm-hmm.
But they broke their permit by going into another area that they didn't have a permit and leveled ground,
yeah.
Level vegetation and unearthed EV. That is the point here. The
right.
point is not,
yeah.
you know,
and permits are set up to protect. And to give confines or restrictions to protect something. It's not just to go do the job. It just says that you can do the work, but within these bounds, these parameters. That's all a permit is. But when they come and say, well, you're working in an area that is not covered by the permit, so go ahead and do it. Well, that's nonsensical.
Why have permits then? Why have departments? If that's the case.
Exactly.
Just go and do what you like.
But,
from the mainland.
But I guess when people are just using this to stop a project, that's what we would probably do. Like if someone come in my backyard and want to site put a nuclear waste facility, I go and complain about it because I just want to stop the project. You damn right I want to stop the project.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're not going to be shy about that. But there's something bigger here. The reality is that you're being displaced. Promises were made originally by politicians and all, and you have a right to stand up and stand your ground and ask for what's right, like any other person.
See, the biggest thing that most of the people don't understand, I think this will be the last time I'll ever explain this part. When Continental was coming to our village, they presented a CPR, a condominium planning regime project.
Mm-hmm.
Condominium structure, per se, standing straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Every individual is responsible for the price tag. Okay? Lie that condominium down on the ground and call it a condominium planning regime project.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go through every planning procedure, every process that you have to go through to figure out what your price tag really is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then share the cost amongst all your condominium planning regime people living on that project. What happened here is the area that they plowed, because of the CPR that they're pursuing, 25 families within the floodway had to move. These families are grandfathered in, like La'ia, Punulu,
mm-hmm.
Ka'ava.
Mm-hmm.
But because Continental was pursuing a CPR, they had to move 25 families out of the flood. So they plowed this area, making room for the 25 families to move to. Now, when they plowed it and found EV, we didn't know how much more EV there was over there.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be an AIS.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why all this thing came into play. But what where all the haka-ka came in was the final price tag they were claiming to be $150,000. People call us stupid. Why we never take them? It wasn't $150,000 for the 25 families in the flood. The 25 families was to pick a lot in that area they just grubbed and leveled, and trees were still poking under the ground.
Mm-hmm.
They pinned 25 signs,
lots.
1 to 25. This is one lot, two lots, we have 25. One lot was, the number was pinned to this big banyan tree. And the person said, if I pick that lot, am I responsible to take that tree out of my lot? I mean, do I have to level it?
Yes.
Question, answer was yes. So we were all, the 25 was all responsible for all the infrastructure. There was no infrastructure there. There's no roads, there's no water, there's no electricity. So what happened is the 25 families had to buy a lot, $150,000. Now that they moved out of their homes in the floodway, they have no house. So they have to build a home for $200,000-something. Then they had to pay for the infrastructure cost, which was told that they had to pay, which is $200,000 to $300,000. We don't know, for telephone poles, water and roads and septic tanks. Then you have to pay, they were responsible for the AIS, which was pushing them out of the ballpark of $600,000 to $800,000. So where's the CPR project that Continental saying, if you want to walk the walk and talk the talk, you better do it. Everybody's supposed to have the same cost across the board. Because we were pushing the envelope, because we were threatening the envelope, Continental started to sell. $150,000. Look, we're selling for $150,000, but it's not what the 25 was subjected to. So the 25 refused to move on an area where there's, we don't know how much more EV, we don't want to live on a grave site, and we don't want to pay that $600,000 to $800,000 cost.
Well, my question is, I read that earlier way back, and I'm thinking, where would each of you get that kind of money? I mean, I thought this was the origin of the people were once living on the plantation, and they had low income. They didn't have the salaries of CEOs of major companies to fork out $600,000.
Yeah.
So just by definition, if, as you're describing it, it was impossible for you to, any of you, to sustain yourself with this piecemeal, if that's the way it's being, they presented it to you, it was destined to fail anyway. It was a package deal that you couldn't refuse, but if you refused it, you were automatically out. So it was done by design, in my opinion.
It was done by design. The threats were always there. If you don't sign, you're out.
But even if you sign, where were you going to get the... Let's say I lived there and I had no income, but I just retired, and I recall they said, we're going to make whole you people that stayed there, give you a chance to... this $150,000. I was under the impression that once you bought that, it was clean land, then you could do your thing.
That's what we were all hoping.
That's what I thought, but you're all the add-ons.
Well, Continental Pacific had mentioned that if you couldn't get a loan from a bank or any institution.
This is Stella
Mulevi.
Mulevi.
That you could get a loan from them, and that loan would be at 10%.
10%,
yes.
And what would the average person have to pay to have to be able to walk in and stick the key into the door and turn it on, open the door? What would it have cost the average person amongst you in that 25?
About $500,000, just to get it all over.
And each of you had a half, probably, each of you probably got $6 or $7 million in the banks, right? I'm just being facetious, but by design.
Well, I think it's by design, because it's evident today that people are still living on their lots, the ones that are being evicted today and some tomorrow. Word is that they already have their lot sold under them already for $400,000. So instead of $150,000, of course, $400,000 sounds better for them, yeah? So I think that's the art of removing people from the property so they can make more money.
But it could, in this situation, if what you're saying is fact, is true, then it could have only been accomplished through the aid of blind government entities, or entities that are willing to facilitate and orchestrate this, because it takes the overseer to turn its back to allow these things. And if it's been my experience, many in this city, especially when it comes to city and county of Honolulu and state agencies, you are at the mercy of the devil.
Correct.
If you believe in the devil, I don't know what it looks like, but you're at the mercy of the devil, because and you guys had the double whammy. You had the mayor, Mufi Hanneman, making this look good, because he hails from that side over there, so he wanted to look good. But the reality is, he left you being babysat by the...
And he also noted that that there, no one would ever get evicted
Well, yeah, I've watched him make promises on the landfill. You'll never get a landfill in your community, and we'll shut this one down. You know, it's just. But I'm sorry, this has nothing. But he's back.
Yes, he is.
He wants to be your governor now. Independently, your governor, because somewhere down the line, somebody said, "Mufi, we want you." I thought we gave him a message the last time. We don't want you. But anyway, it's not about. I'm sorry about that. but people suffering, it bothers me when a fair shake. I mean, if he in turn. How about the Corporation Council? Are they fighting you as well, or have they been receptive? Or you? I mean, they represent the city and the mayor, but I've learned that in previous cases, they represent the developers too, because they're hell bent on making sure projects go because it brings revenue.
Well, this is Tony Lucricchio. I can tell you that what happened when the state agencies, even though they stopped the rail, the Supreme Court stopped the rail. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The state agency had a policy that there would be no penalties for violations. So that signaled the developers, you can do anything you want. The historic preservation law is a very unique law. It is unprecedented. In that the legislature ruled that developers who do dig up EVE without a permit, mm-hmm. Then that's a criminal action. 1 year in jail, $10,000. And there were three occasions where that happened. And no criminal action was taken by the state or anything at all to stop it. So while they stopped a $6 billion project, the influence of this particular project mm-hmm. on the state and on the city was that nothing happened, even though we filed formal written complaints. The city, we ran into the problem that Lex Smith, who represented the developer, was also the mayor's campaign chairman.
Mm-hmm.
And
Mufi Hanneman.
This is the current Caldwell. Lex Smith was Mufi Hanneman's campaign chairman and Kurt Caldwell. Caldwell and Hanneman are very
bosom buddies.
Well, you take the face off of one, you get the other one.
Right.
But the bottom line was that here was this chairman who had been appointed ethics committee by Mufi Hanneman, and then when it was discovered of the link, then he quickly resigned. But the bottom line was the law was not enforced, so this little group was forced to file a major lawsuit mm-hmm. against some 30-some defendants, city, state, developer, other organizations. And it's been like climbing up a glass mountain. So that suit has been dismissed, half of it. The other half will be dismissed shortly. And then that case on enforcing the act can be taken directly to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. So just for sake of fairness, I would have reached out to the city and county of Honolulu and invited them to the show, and that invitation is still extended out there. But it has been my experience, and I would have invited William Isla, but he was busy trying to protect his workers from Faye Hanahano's, quote, attacks, and also while asleep at the wheel at the state at the palace, vandalism occurring, but he couldn't respond to that. So it's been my experience with the city hall. I've written letters asking them to just questions to appear on the show or respond to questions we have on the show. And it takes months before they even call me back to say, "We're sorry, we just inadvertently overlooked you." So that's why you don't hear them on the show today. I would have extended an invitation, but it's been my experience that for some reason they don't like to appear on the Carol Cox Show. So in spirit, they are here. and we'll treat them appropriately. So anyway, just for the listeners out there that believe in the fair and balance, we just tend not to be respected. They don't respond to us timely. And so I don't know what your experience has been with them in responding to you, the city and the state.
In the beginning, when we were struggling with what we knew, finally found out that Lex Schmidt was Kirk Caldwell's campaign manager and stuff, we tried to approach Kirk Caldwell before he was mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to his campaign headquarters and we asked him if he would, you know, meet with us, come out and speak with the people. His response was he cannot at the moment because he is not mayor yet. And that was kind of an insult to the people of Kuku, but we're known as people of Oahu and Hawaii also.
Mm-hmm.
We pay money for the rail and everything that he's trying to push for, and we is equal as everybody else. But he can go to other communities and say, hi, my name is Kirk Caldwell. I'm running for mayor, and how can I help you? This is what I can do for you. But for Kahuku, I cannot come out there because I'm not mayor yet. So when he became mayor, I wrote a letter stating just that now that you're mayor, would you please come out and talk to us? He sent a representative, but you know, you said you would come, not the representative, mm-hmm. you. And we need, you know, I watch him on the news all the time, and what he does to the homeless people in Hawaii, and it's not sitting right with me that you go over there and take all the things from them, and then you're only just going to push them to another place, another time, gather more stuff, and end up someplace else. You're not resolving anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with this is we have 30 families that are being evicted in Kahuku, and he's never addressed us at all. Knowing that Lex Smith is his campaign manager, is that a conflict of interest that this guy can do anything to us and nobody's coming to our aid? No agency, like the ship that's supposed to protect the mm-hmm. elements, they mm-hmm. haven't done that. We have an issue now that's sitting in front of us. I don't know how much more time we have.
We got another hour, and okay. And we'll talk about that. I think we're talking about the same thing. There's this letter that
yes.
within the courts,
okay.
and I want to give
okay.
a lot more time to that and any other comments you have. But I go back a little bit about Caldwell's and his representation and his affiliation with Lex Smith, who represents the company that is causing you the hardship or whatever you do, how you describe it. I wonder, just curious, how many occasions did Lex Smith, during the campaign strategy meetings or outside of that, just curious, how many opportunities did Caldwell afford Lex Smith to discuss the development out there, the Kahuku plantation development? See, but I have come to learn that Kirk Caldwell is an elitist, not by design, not by his own efforts, but he's an elitist because he's learned to get at his house. He gets a tax exempt for because his house is historical. His daughter gets caught for bashing up, campaign signs and a little marijuana. But Kimo over there in Waipahu gets taken to jail and get a booking, whereas his daughter goes off to college. So this is the kind of behavior that I expect. And when we see the shuffling and the hustling and the rustling of the homeless on our sidewalks and everything about him, and then now he turns in his state of the state or whatever, city of the city address, I call it something else, but what he talks about how the people want to see the homeless treated fairly. Well, dang, that's interesting. You've been instrumental in designing laws to manipulate and move them around as if they're cattle with disease.
Yeah.
What portion of this can we believe? And so, as I always say to all of you out there, the listeners, the listeners out there, what you have to do is, if you think that the Kahuku Plantation Residents Association is getting the short end of the stick, just wait. Whatever it is that you may be experiencing, listeners, and if it's the same people involved, if it works in Kahuku and they rip you off and cause you hardship,
make us homeless,
then it'll happen in Haliva and anywhere else, because it's a team of them now. It's they're moving through the communities and clearing the way for development. It's big business. This is what we've come to learn with our, quote, government.
And this is why we cannot give up this fight, because mm-hmm. we cannot let this happen anywhere else to us. I mean, mm-hmm. it's happening to us right now, and things that are happening on our windward coast is going to come quick and fast.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to make people aware that this is happening to our own people of Hawaii, especially to a plantation village that only wanted to live peacefully in a quiet plantation environment. And, mm-hmm. and we're being raked. We're being... I just want to make something clear that I do not live in a floodplain area. I live out. And I just kept fighting.
But I do.
And Stella does.
You live in the floodplain area.
Yes, I do.
So we've been fighting to protect all of the families, as much of the families as we can that need our help, that were subjected to the high cost of this $600 to $700 or $800. You don't know what the equation was for them. Mm-hmm. It was unfair. That's why the fight began, was because they're saying, again, CPR, all the costs should be known to everybody. It was unknown to this 25, and the protection was for them. So,
mm-hmm. so what we're going to do is we're going to talk in the next hour a bit about... apparently there was a letter in this process that you guys have come up with that was written by Lex Smith. Is that or who was it written by? Or give the details of the actual, but it involved the judges and what have you. So if you would, Tony, yes. they'd ask you to try and explain this as their attorney.
Okay.
and let's make it clear. You're making this presentation on behalf of the request
yeah.
of your clients.
And attorneys are not allowed to criticize judges publicly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, this letter allows us to simply quote the letter.
Mm-hmm.
And in summary, what the letter says is, in fact, if I could read quickly the key. This was a letter from Judge Barbara Richardson, who heads up the district court judges, their assignments and so forth. And this is from her attorney on her behalf. We had asked about the fact that there was one of the judges slipped in one of the hearings and informed us that he had a copy of a 100-page attack by Lex Smith on us that somehow got to the judges.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got him to say under oath that, yes, he had written that and he had sent it to Barbara Richardson. So I can make that statement because mm-hmm. he said he did. And then this letter confirms that they had gotten it from him. And then what the letter says is, she then, without telling me as the attorney, sent the attack to all of the judges hearing all of these eviction cases
mm-hmm.
Through, in effect, the back door. And we didn't know it had happened. And all of those judges then ruled against us,
mm-hmm.
and they did not reveal they got the letter. So what she says, and...
She is the judge, Barbara Richardson?
This is her attorney on her behalf.
Mm-hmm.
It is my understanding that your first request relates to a letter dated October 8th, 2013. Off the reading for a second. That was the 100-page attack.
Mm-hmm.
That was sent by Lex Smith Esquire to Judge Richardson regarding the cases mentioned above. And above states these very cases. Please be advised. That sentence means we hadn't been told that before.
Mm-hmm.
Please be advised that Judge Richardson forwarded copies of Mr. Smith's letter to the judges who were assigned to hear those specific cases. That admission is here is the chief judge telling us that what's called in the law an ex parte communication was sent to all the judges. In district court, you don't get a jury. And in these cases, you don't get a jury. So the judges decide the facts. And we now, for the first time on January 27, 2014, we learned that the judges who were deciding the facts had this secret communication, had it sent secretly to them. It goes on, and this is one of the reasons that causes us great fear. When, and then back to the letter, when the deputy chief judge receives documents regarding specific cases, it is the usual practice to transmit the documents to the judges who are presiding over these matters. That means that if you have a criminal matter in the First District Court, all the prosecutor has to do is send a letter to Judge Richardson. She will then secretly send it to the judge hearing that case. You can't have a jury. And then your chance of the concern is fair trial is then interfered with. When this letter identifies it as a policy or a usual practice, that means that people beyond these folks in this case also have the same backdoor situation. She concludes by saying, however, we will not provide you with copies of communications between Judge Richardson and other judges because those communications are privileged, which means that she can do this and we can never find out what she said to the judges and so forth. So based on that letter, we then filed with the Intermediate Court of Appeals a copy of the letter and said because of this letter and what it implies and the fact that the judges who were making the decisions, there is no dispute. She said she got the letter from Lex Smith. She sends it to the judges. The judges do not reveal it. And that those facts are, that's indisputable. If they revealed it, it would show up on the record. And we showed that they didn't reveal they got it. They kept it secret. So by sending it to them, we said, you must stay or stop the evictions where people are being moved out. Because now this judge has admitted this is going on. We got, after 3 weeks waiting, we got a response from the Intermediate Court of Appeals dismissing our request, period. No explanation, no nothing. So, in effect, that response meant that the Intermediate Court of Appeals did not see any emergency in a backdoor ex parte communication to sitting judges. We'll now have to appeal that to the Supreme Court.
Well, we're going to come back and continue this conversation. My guests are from the Kahuku Plantation Residents Association, and we're with their attorney, Tony Lucretio. So we'll be back shortly. This is the Carol Cox Show. We'll be back at 524-1080, and I know we have a caller. You can take us in the next hour. We'll be back. Thank you.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K101. It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Sugar candy. I'm sweet on candy, and candy he's sweet on me. He understands me. Yeah. My candy's always handy, just when I need sympathy. Oh, I wish that there were four of him, and I could love that much, that much more of him. He has taken my complete heart, and I got a sweet tooth for my sweetheart. Candy, 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 candy. It's gonna be just dandy. The day that I'll take my candy and make him mine, mine, oh mine, yeah, mine, oh mine. The day that I'll take my candy and make him mine.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. 524-1080 is the number. I'm speaking here now with, in the studio with me, is the Kuhuku Plantation Residents Association, and Mr. Glenn Maganoy, Stella Mulavai, John Errett, and Terrell Tabaz. And they also have their attorney with them, Mr. Tony Lucretio. I had a caller on hold last hour, so we'll go ahead and entertain that real quickly and see what's happening. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question?
Hello?
Yes, good morning.
Hello?
Hello, go ahead. You have a comment or question? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead with your comment or question. Caller?
Hello?
Call back. I don't know why we can't get you. Anyway, we apologize for that. Don't know why she couldn't hear. But so we were talking about the There's a letter sent to Judge Richardson, Barbara Richardson, by Lex Smith, who's the opposing counsel, we'll just say, for the company that is the developer.
Yes.
And so you view it as an ex parte. Let's try this caller one more. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question?
Yes, I do. Hold on. Let me turn the radio off so I can hear you better. My question is regarding the Kahuku land.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Oh, I can't hear you again. Well, let me turn on my radio.
I'm not saying anything. Just go ahead and...
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. If we got to go through this, just call later.
Okay. So here's my question. The land at the Kahuku plantation...
Hello. Turn your radio down a bit.
Okay. I can't hear you on the phone at all.
Well, I can't
hear you asking me questions.
Okay, go ahead and give me your question, and we can...
Okay, my question is, the Kahuku Plantation lands, can somebody tell me if they are Crown lands, government lands, or private lands?
Private lands with a condition that they be sold at an affordable price to the residents.
Okay, my comment, if these are allodial title lands, I'm sure the attorney knows this, but I don't understand why there's all the misunderstandings, because the subject matter jurisdiction that the courts give themselves has to do with the Organic Act. The Organic Act only transferred public land. It did not transfer private allodial title land. Therefore, the court has no subject matter jurisdiction. They have no authority to assert their jurisdiction. And there is a case called Foster and Elam versus Nielsen, which was a Supreme Court case in 1829 that addresses foreign allodial title land, which had to do with Spanish Crown land sold to an individual in the area of Louisiana. And during the treaties between Spain and France, the Crown land was never transferred in the treaty. And in the Treaty of Paris between France and the United States, these lands were never transferred. At one point, there was a question of who had dominion over these lands. And what the Supreme Court ruled was that the United States, its agents and agencies, has no authority to assert their jurisdiction on foreign allodial title land. The lands in Hawaii are all allodial title lands split up three ways in the Mahele. There were the government land, there were the crown lands, that were also the private lands of Kamehameha III, his heirs and his successors. And there were the private Kumuhiki lands from which the Kuleana lands came from. So if these are private, foreign, allodial title lands, why are we going to the U.S. Supreme Court asking their permission to take possession of what already belongs to us? And in their own treaties and agreements, they do not have any authority to assert their jurisdiction.
Well, let me respond. We have a jurisdictional question. What they've done is the landowners have come in under what's called summary possession, and we've stated that the court doesn't have jurisdiction because of the homes on there belong to individual, and the monies have been taken, some over $300,000 that we allege were belonging to the residents. Once you have those kinds of disputes where you could get a jury in circuit court, then the court has no jurisdiction. What we have to do before the federal issue of violation of civil rights under 14th Amendment occurs is exhaust all of our remedies. And thus far we've gone through over 100 separate hearings, mm-hmm. Which has been exhaustive.
Costly.
And we're going through that routing. Then we will raise all of the objections, including the one you've raised. And I appreciate that information. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Caller, good morning. Hello. Anyway, so back to this letter sent by Rick Smith. Again, for clarity, who was the actual author? Was there more than one person, but who penned it and who signed it?
Under oath, Lex Smith said that he drafted the letter,
okay,
signed it, and he admits sending it to Judge Richardson. They stated that he gave me a copy of it. A month later, I did get a copy, but I was never told that Judge Richardson, in the meantime, had sent that to the judges sitting on our cases.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't find that out till 4 months mm-hmm. after, and after people are being evicted. We couldn't understand. We kept losing cases we felt we should have won, but we didn't know that this huge amount of attack had been done through Judge Richardson.
And ex parte behavior applies to the judges. There's no one immune to this or immunized from the... It's not legal to have ex parte communications, are there? Or is,
well,
in a,
once Judge Richardson admitted she got it from, as she did in the letter, and I can quote that because it's her letter and mm-hmm. her statement, then that made it an ex parte communication. And then she sends it to the judges. The protection of the law is those judges must then announce they got it,
mm-hmm.
and none of them did. So it then also becomes a violation of the general ex parte. And in 50 years of practice, this is the first time any judge has ever put in writing mm-hmm. that she did this, and it's a policy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we felt we would be successful with the Intermediate Court of Appeals, and we were not. Mm-hmm. We didn't feel that that was serious enough.
So we're not just talking a mere elementary act. These are there are consequences to having ex parte behind-the-scene activity, especially in a courtroom where deliberation of facts and each party gets to present their case and due process. So what I want to ask is, I know you are limited to what you can say about this as an attorney before the courts, but the clients, how does that impact you when you have gone and spent your time, your money, your trust into the court system and you learn of this? Where does that leave you mentally as citizens who go before the courts, trusting this court? Does it bother you that ex parte, that the opposing counsel has access to the court system and the judges who then disperse this, as he's described, to other judges, and then you find yourself losing these cases? Where do you stand, and what's your feeling about that? Is it fair? Do you think it's deprived you of any fairness or due process?
First of all, you know, we've learned through our life that the example I want to use is the symbol of justice, mm-hmm. the scale of justice with the woman blindfolded, and she's not to see who's telling her mm-hmm. any evidence, facts, whatever. All she's listening is to the facts.
Weighing them.
And that is presented under oath, transcripts, in court. Mm-hmm. And then she weighs her decision on the scale of justice. But when you come into the left field with information and admittance in this letter, I thought a letter came from Lex Smith, went to the judge, and the judge sent her concerns to the other judges. But this letter, let me read this part one more time. It says that it is my understanding that your first request relates to a letter dated October 8, 2013 that was sent by Lex Smith, Esquire, to Judge Richardson's regarding the cases mentioned above, which is on my people's cases. Mm-hmm. Please be advised that Judge Richardson forwarded copies of Mr. Smith's letters. If it was her concerns, I can see that's why they're saying, well, that's the practice that they do all the time. Mm-hmm. Judges communicate with judges.
Right.
But you don't communicate with facts coming in from left field mm-hmm. that's been handed to a judge, and a judge forwarded the same information from Lex Smith to the pool of judges that presides over our cases.
Mm-hmm.
That means the pool has been tampered with, mm-hmm. especially if it's not noted that Mr. Lucretia have the same information, because every time we go to court, the opposing counsel goes, Your Honor, I didn't get that information.
Right.
So, I mean, why is it fair for them to do it? Even if it's they think it's a minute thing, mm-hmm. you know, I have another issue of my eviction. If you do the crime, you got to do the time. If you made a mistake, a violation, or what have you, and you admit it into a letter, the scale of justice is tampered. Why should we have courts? Why should we submit evidence and information when we know someone's going to come into the back door and change that with tainted information? Why should we have? It's not fair. Our cases have not been fair.
And due process. You've not been afforded justice. The way it's being described, I've been privy. But also, we'll talk about Mr. Clayton Hee, or Senator Clayton Hee, and I'd like to inject some of the names of your state representative. Where were they? Were they just waving the bus on by and telling you, well, we'll get in touch with me later, or because you have a court case now, we can't really get involved? Because Clayton Hee, Senator Hee, is head of the Judiciary Committee, am I correct, in the state Senate?
Yes, correct.
So you appealed to him through your attorney for assistance to have this presented to the judiciary and to have a hearing. What happened to that? Did it happen? Is it going to happen? What was his response, or did he just dismiss your request?
Well, people got to understand that this has been a battle for all of us, especially our attorney. He's been a one-army man.
Mm-hmm.
We've been his people putting the papers together, helping him type it, helping him record it, helping him Xerox.
Mm-hmm.
Going to court every time, every day, noting that this had happened, and why we're losing, frustrates him. Frustrates all of us. Our bubble being burst all the time when we see hope and there's no hope.
Mm-hmm.
So when he had requested Mr. Hee to do as much as he can as a state senator and a judiciary committee, he only requested Clayton to do his best for his constituents, our people. And that's all we would want to expect from him is, you know, please help us in every way you can. And if the only thing you can do is to send a letter and a request to the Supreme Court Justice,
mm-hmm.
to send the letter and a request to the Judiciary Committee, or make some kind of a effort to say, let's look into this. That's all we ask of Clayton Hee. He sent it to the Judiciary, the Supreme Court Justice, on the 14th of February. He didn't send it to the other parties that he claimed to have. He had sent it to only when Mr. Lucretia was on his case,
mm-hmm.
calling him 3 times, 4 times a day, irritating the crap out of him. I can see where he can get all ticked off that, you know, somebody's hounding me, man. You know, don't call me. But you got to understand that he's desperate. He's a lawyer. But he's trying to save the people.
And time is of the essence. So my question then, because I don't want to put your attorney on the spot, in that 100-page letter that was generated by Lex Smith to Judge Richardson, do you believe any of the letter's contents, I know it was shared with other judges, but do you believe that any of the contents or any specific points or elements of that letter influence the other judges, not the fact that they received that letter? Do you believe, or are you exploring that, or have you come to terms with or defining what really was communicated in the letter that was incorporated and used by these judges to dismiss or rule against you?
Well, first of all, you know, it's already a no-no to send it anyway in the first place.
Yeah.
The thing is if it wasn't influential, why did the judge send it anyway? Why did she send it further than her desk to other judges to contaminate the pool of judges? Mm-hmm. It must have been an issue that needed to be heard by the other judges to contaminate their mind, which I feel, in my opinion, because when we go to court, and the only reason why I represent our people and I've been doing it for 20-something years, and every time we speak of what I've done for the people, and that's why I'm getting evicted in retaliation, I shut down Mr. Lex's tries to go back onto the Ways and Means Committee. I mean, we testified in behalf against that because it was conflict of interest. I sent letters to William Isler protesting what Noboa and Shipta how they reacted on our issues and didn't mm-hmm. come out at all. I sent letters to a lot of agencies, and yeah, I'm on the hot seat because I'm trying to protect my plantation village for our people, and I'm on a hot seat, so that's why it was retaliated on me.
Here's a little idea for you. If you want to get Isla to any forum now, it has been stated and it's clear now, just incorporate the word Howley in there. He'll come to their rescue and then you'll get his attention. Just serious. Apparently, yeah. That's the only thing that triggers his interest in justice. So I'm sounding facetious, but apparently it's proven. He'll go to great lengths to speak up on and defending people for being identified as Howley, while in fact, I give you an example, and this is off trail here a bit, but when he was at Hui Malama, when the Ka'ai was, and he was in contempt of court, Isla himself, Charlie Maxwell, a member of his organization, referred and made something paraphrasing, how can we have a Howley judge making a decision on our issues as native? William Isler was part of that group. You can Google that and you'll find it in the Star Advertiser, but I didn't see him complaining about that occasion. So if, in fact, you want his attention, just play loosely with that word and he'll come running to defend. Then you, while he's there defending those people, he can then answer your questions. Sounds crazy, I know, and I'm not belittling Isla, but apparently many other issues he never shows up. So, but again, aspects of that letter, where does that leave you now? Do you believe that the judge should then have afforded you an opportunity to revisit these issues? I don't know what the legal process, open these cases back up and appeal, or some invite you to come in and point by point that they used? Or even if they didn't use it, the fact is it has tainted the waters and allowing you guys to come back and rebut in due process of fairness. But again, we would be asking them to, you would be asking them to be fair when they haven't been fair, in your opinion. So,
well, let me just give you what the legal basis is of the whole ex parte. It is not, the case law in the courts have stated it doesn't matter whether the judge even read the communication, because then you have to prove that it affected the judge's decision, and you didn't know it had been sent. It's simply that they got it and didn't reveal it. It's called a contact.
the contact from Judge Richardson of the Lex Smith letter was a contact. The people are protected under the law by saying once you're contacted, you must tell the other side you've been contacted.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when that doesn't occur and it becomes a practice, as it says in the letter, or a policy, then that's a serious problem. In my opinion, generally, as it affects the entire court system, and not specifically referring to this case, it means that it's behind the scenes. This is the largest court, the first district, in the state. Most people who come through that system cannot afford lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And they are at the mercy of the other side sending these communications to Judge Richardson, who by policy then sends it to the judges hearing the case without a jury. That is frightening from an attorney's point of view, and that is why we're now at the next stage of appeal. While we've lost stopping the evictions on a stay basis, stay pending appeal, we still have to argue the situation. We're now preparing what's called a writ of certiorari for the Supreme Court, and then we'll see what the Supreme Court's opinion is based on this letter.
Mm-hmm.
It is, for me, an attorney, it's very frightening.
And this is any of us, because this court system, this particular one, is this district, there's no jury.
Absolutely not. No.
So you're at their mercy.
You're at their mercy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
this is Terrell.
As far as for the rest of our family members who are all involved, you know, like you asked earlier, if we think that this letter has a importance on what's going on. And how does it make me feel? It makes me feel like we're being jaded and shady deals.
Mm-hmm.
And we always hear about how the public is all talking about, how can we trust government?
Mm-hmm.
How can we trust the judiciary system when they themselves are not following the rules that they are supposed to follow?
Mm-hmm.
So you telling me, being just a normal citizen, just to be a follower, and here are the rules that you're supposed to do. And we follow those rules, and then when it applied to you, there's a different set of rules. It really makes you frustrated, because everybody's frustrating. Our group is starting to get segmented in a way, but we still have faith in our lawyer. We believe in our fight. That's why we continue to do it. Like he said, here's this little small group taking on the big bad wolf, and we're biting back.
But the wolf in this case isn't howling; they're whispering.
Mm-hmm.
If they're howling and growling, you tend to be prepared to know how many and what they're doing and their strategies. But if they're whispering and at the urging of the judge, if the way you describe
right.
it, you represent what the average citizen out there represents.
Mm-hmm.
We, any of us, walk in that courtroom now knowing this. I guess we all just should plead guilty of anything
exactly.
we're charged for, because if there's ex parte communication, I don't care what was in the letter.
Yeah.
I really don't care, because it just the appearance.
Yes, it makes you feel like
it's defrauding.
Yeah,
it defrauds
exactly.
us as citizens. Just to, for you, I'm not attached to your situation. I have
right.
no interest per se investment in it. But now that you're telling me that there was a 100-page letter written by Lex Smith or authored by or introduced by Lex.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, some may dismiss that. Here's my problem. It's not just a starting there. It's the relationships that he has in his position in his official capacity as a commissioner and appointed on the
exactly.
commission, all of that. That means there's a ring of
yep.
that's impenetrable. Justice has no place.
Totally.
I mean, that's my take, and if the judge want to get me for whatever, fine. I would love to be part of that fight, but this is crazy.
It is crazy.
If it was just another party, say I was driving by and saw Tony Lucretio doing something that I believe was offensive to society. Well, then the judge should have said, well, okay, but I got a contact, Mr. You know, you get to meet your accuser, right? This is a court. That's what we say on the street. Everybody say, every man accuses a woman accused of something should get a right to. This is known by anybody.
Right.
But in this case, you're in the judicial system. You're entrusting that they're going to, and there's quiet and whispering
going on. They're
going to
protect you, but they don't.
But it's exponentially become troublesome because of these relationships. A lawyer representing an entity that is impacting the people, they get violations, or you report what you believe is violations, you're blown off by the state government and the city government, and then in turn the mayor brushes you off, and then you go to court thinking you got some recourse or some sound practice, and then I don't know what was in the letter, I don't know if the judge use it or not, but we do know now, as you testify, you as clients didn't know.
Yep. Exactly.
That's scary.
Let me clarify one thing, and that is that when Lex Smith sent the letter to Judge Richardson, she apparently thought the content was very serious, and I'm free to testify to this because I'm the affected party. She sent the letter to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel to have sanctions against me.
Mm-hmm.
They would not look at the letter because cases were going on, and their policy is you can't affect it while cases are going on. So I didn't get a chance to have to object to all of the things. I did send that I deny everything mm-hmm. in the letter as wrongdoing, but the key here is Judge Richardson felt by sending it to the disciplinary council. Judge Richardson also filed other grievances against me. I had a stroke on May the 6th, and because I didn't, all of the judges in all of the courts except this district court granted me a continuance,
mm-hmm.
as they'd given Mr. Smith when he had his stroke. He got a 2-month continuance in the district court. My doctors had said, stay away from court for 20 days. Instead, these district court judges ordered me to be present. These are facts. These are mm-hmm. filed matters, so I can say it. Even though the doctor said you could bring on another stroke. But what happened then was that Judge Richardson then filed a complaint against me because I kept coming in because they said I couldn't continue. And she said he shouldn't have come in. He should have resigned. Had I not come in, they would have been defaulted on. And for their failure to force my resignation, they filed this complaint against me, which mm-hmm. I've responded to. And we'll see what happens. Practicing law under these circumstances you got to be kind of brave. But I want to clarify that the violation was in sending it to the judges that we've already filed that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not something that's a matter of record. All right?
Okay.
Go ahead. You know, you asked, and you're right, we don't care and we don't know what was in Lex Smith's letter. If there's procedures that you're supposed to follow, if there's law that you're supposed to follow, if, you know, like the DD case, one of the jury would just shake somebody's hand like a friend and, you know, and they was going to throw the case out. This guy presented 100 page and it got passed down to the pool of judges. The thing is, if there's a rule, there's a process, there's a law, and once you break it, you cannot fix it, you know, mm-hmm. because it's like going to a bank and you're robbing the bank and then 2 days later you get caught. Oh, here's the money. I'm sorry. No, if you do the crime, you got to do the time. That's what the law always said to us as we grew up.
Right.
So if that's an illegal move, you cannot do that.
Let's get a caller here. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question? Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question real quick?
Yes, I do. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay.
Turn your radio down.
Yeah, I am, but that's the only way I can hear you.
Well.
For some reason, I'm getting not to hear you on my phone. Okay, so I called in earlier and made the comments about the Organic Act. The response was the attorney had to exhaust all levels before being able to go to the highest court. And actually, there's a case called Forge versus Conrad. That's F, parentheses 201, parentheses 1848. And this case is a doctrine that allows you to jump directly to the Supreme Court. This would save your clients a whole lot of money and a whole lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, the problem that I see here, because I'm a landowner and I've been going through the system, the problem that I see is we keep living the definition of insanity, where we keep doing the same thing over and over again, and we keep expecting different results. In the U.S. court system, when it comes to our allodial title lands, we will never get fairness and equity, because once we do, it's the beginning of the end of the state. So the U.S., despite the Apology Act, despite everything that they say about wanting to make things right with the Kanaka Maoli and the land issues here, their actions speak much louder than their words. The bottom line is, what keeps giving the courts authority is our ignorance that they have authority, but they don't have authority.
Okay.
So as long as the people keep going to the courts to get power to go back onto their land, they will never have a satisfactory outcome.
Okay, call.
You must go to the allodial title holder.
Okay, call.
And you
can
find that on the map.
Let me just,
the old map for
yeah.
the area.
Well, Carla, if you could, can you send me an email and I'll share your contacts with the attorney and the group here, because that's a whole different show, and we appreciate your sharing your information. But
let me just respond very quickly. I have to, as an attorney functioning in this court, believe in the ultimate justice. And we, therefore, I move up through the system. If I believed that the bottom line was that we will never get justice in the court system in Hawaii, then I wouldn't be practicing law here. And so I have to, and I've said to my clients that these facts will result in your ultimately being successful once we go through all of the steps and hoops we have to go through. That's what I believe, and therefore, that's what I'm practicing.
Caller, good morning. Quickly, you have a comment or question?
Can you say that again?
Do you have a comment or question?
Yes.
Okay. Real quick. Now,
I too have been going through the court system. And I every time we have a win, if there is a political agenda with those lands, for instance, for the rail, for Kaka'ako, for any land that the government, U.S. government or counties have an agenda for, you will lose.
Okay.
Because their political agenda supersedes any paper that you show to show proof. That's why I'm saying there is no fairness and equity in the court system.
Okay, Carla, once again, I'd like to offer you, send me an email and I will share your contact information with the group here, okay?
certainly.
All right, thank you. Please, Carol at carolcox.com.
Let's
C-A-R-R-O-L-L at C-A-R-R-O-L-L-C-O-X.com.
Let me follow up on the Clayton Key situation.
Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome.
We asked Clayton Key, as chairman of the Judiciary Committee, to send the letter to the Supreme Court. We couldn't get to the Supreme Court directly. And to the Judicial Conduct Committee. While he did send it to the Supreme Court, he, for some reason, we don't know why, didn't send it to the Judicial Conduct Commission until 4 days before clients met with him. I obviously had upset him greatly in my three calls a day doing my job, but for some reason, he lied to us about when he sent it. When I tried to figure that out, because Clayton, he is generally a good guy, he has been sued by Continental Pacific for his involvement in his official capacity with us. That's unheard of. I think there's a possibility that Clayton, he has refused to announce that he sent it to the commission, which we asked him again yesterday to do, because he's kind of afraid of that lawsuit. So it's a way that you silence the legislative branch by suing them for doing their job. And that's even more scary.
I'd like to talk quickly now, not to change it, but we only have so many more minutes left, of my eviction and the eviction of the people that are pending right now and the ones to come. There's a total of almost 30 that's supposed to be, that's on a chopping block of Continental Pacific. Get the people out, and then probably they can make 400,000, 300,000 for the properties that are there now. The 25 families that went back to the floodplain just to pacify the 25, because they can hear the objections of people moving on an area where there's EV, no infrastructure, no nothing. You know, they didn't come out and say, oh, wait, it's not going to be 600,000, 800,000. It's going to be 150,000. It never came back to try and fix it like that. You know, so that means it was 500, 600, 800,000. They only came back to pacify the 25 families by saying, look, listen, I will give you guys an agreement to 2040. Okay? You guys can stay in your homes to 2040. Okay? But you're on a month to month. We're on a month-to-month right now, and look where month-to-month took us. Where you think a company and the track record that they're having now as involving with us, what makes you think they're going to sell the property, make the money, and then be responsible for a floodplain area for plantation families that they left behind? They're going to just exercise this 45-day notice and says, you know, if you're out because we're going back to Florida and we don't want to be responsible. Then it's going to leave those families high and dry. The thing is I was evicted when I was spending some time on in Thanksgiving, my youngest girl in Orange County, and I got a call from my cousin telling me that they're in the house now, taking all my stuffs out. Before Thanksgiving, I spent some time with my oldest daughter.
And when you say they, is it the sheriff or the company or their representative?
To me, I will call it Lex Smith's posse.
Okay. who were they, though? I mean, were they sheriff?
They were Johnny the Movers. Lex Smith organized Johnny the Movers and a sheriff that they called a sheriff.
Uniformed officer was there?
No.
But
no.
He was a sheriff.
He claimed to be a sheriff.
He was called.
Claimed to be a sheriff.
Okay.
He was called to be a sheriff.
Yeah.
I just will fast forward real quick. When an eviction happens, the server will serve you the eviction. He will orchestrate the movers, the storage place where your stuff's going to be. He'll go in the house to start moving things out. He'll take inventory of all the things that were removed from your home. Once it's moved to the area of to be placed in a storage, they will come back online and says, I am the server. I was the one that orchestrated the move. I took inventory of Mr. Maganoy's items, and here is his items. That has never happened.
Because it's a seizure of your property.
Correct.
Now, one question here. So they go in, don't they? Well, you are on a month-to-month? You were renting or paying a month-to-month? And does the rental or tenant laws come into play? Or because
landlord-tenant laws
come into play. But to show up, did they show up the same day and just started moving, or they're notified? They never serve you.
They never serve me personally, no.
So don't you have like 45 days under the tenant-landlord rule? Or is that different?
Usually under most actions you do. But under summary possession, you have 48 hours to get your stuff out. They serve this writ by the sheriff. I won't mention his name. The sheriff, supposed sheriff. And then that same instant, they had a locksmith break in, take all of his stuff. And then when he went to check, there was almost $30,000 worth of valuable goods missing from the locker. We have gotten declarations from the movers, which we found out were prepared by Lex Smith, stating that the sheriff took some of these things himself. When I asked him to identify any evidence he had that this was a sheriff, he refused. And while he did not take the Fifth Amendment because of his involvement in this case, we now know that the police department has copies of these documents Lex Smith himself prepared, which show that, A, this guy is a sheriff, went to the Kahuku police station as a sheriff, and he refuses to give us any evidence that the guy was a sheriff. The fellow showed up at my house saying, I've got these musical instruments we took from Glenn's home, and I want to give them to you. I said, you can't give them to me. You have to give them to the police.
Mm-hmm. Because the police is investigating.
There's a criminal investigation. Right. And so that's a whole other area that's going on. While Mr. Smith refused to answer my questions about it, we know there was a meeting in his office with the sheriff and the movers in which it was announced that this guy was a sheriff. If he wasn't a sheriff, then impersonating an officer, and if it's shown that there was a theft, and one of the things that was stolen was a weapon, a firearm, that raises it to a 20-year sentence. So that's why we were trying to find out where Mr. Smith, who wrote this document, got the information the guy was actually a sheriff. And what Mr. Smith's involvement was. We filed a criminal, Glenn has filed a criminal thing, including Mr. Smith and Continental on the criminal aspects.
You know, I just want to say that when the police got involved, they quickly claimed that there was a second storage. We received a letter from Lex Smith saying that all your belongings are in this storage here. Week and a half later, almost 2 weeks after they took it out of my home. They pinned the note on the door, same day went in and took things out. Now, about two weeks after, I finally get notification where my stuffs are.
After we went to court.
Yeah.
So this was a writ of summary possession?
It's called a writ of possession.
And was it done in a timely fashion or 48 hours? Or?
Our thing that we've filed with the court, so I can say this, we filed this, said that the writ is a notice. And you have under this special law, you only have 48 hours to get out 30, 40 years of a lifetime, which is pretty much impossible to do. But you have 48 hours. They ignored that and went in immediately.
So they took the things. After the police got involved, because it wasn't properly finished, my move. If the judge would look on my records of all my court cases and stuff, at the end, you're supposed to sign your name as the orchestrative server and itemized and identified.
Inventory.
That hasn't been done. If the judge looks at my records, he's going to say, it looks like your stuff because there's no server, no person that's saying he took items of your belongings. That means your stuff should still be in house 37 where you live.
Mm-hmm.
But when they got notified from the police that now they're involved, they started skating by saying there's a second storage. Wait a minute, not only that, there's another storage. Okay, so after that storage, then he tries to dump the guitars to Mr. Lucio. And after he said, I can't take it, I don't know if that's Glenn's proper guitars anyway. It could be any guitar. And who are you? He wouldn't give his name. Then he went to serve another paper to one of our persons in, mm-hmm. in the village. And he wrote on the bottom, trying to pass it to one of our own residents. He said, I have your musical instruments, trying to dump it to this elderly guy to take the hot items off his hand. If there is a second storage, why are you driving around with it in the back of your car? So,
right.
I think we have to clarify that the word of a second storage came from the movers. They've never admitted that there was a second storage.
Well, I'm only saying that that's what,
yeah.
what I
we
had
to
what
be
was told.
Very careful to make certain that we clarify
make representation that are not.
And in fact, now we get this declaration prepared by Mr. Smith that throws the sheriff under the bus and says he took these things. And that was prepared. If Mr. Smith knew that he took these things, what about Mr. Smith's duty to mm-hmm. inform the police?
Well, people that might want to support you, or if the listeners out there are more interested in more of this information, who can they contact? Can they contact you, Tony? Or
I think the group is... We meet every Wednesday night for 2 years for 3 hours. This is the most educated group of tenants, and they can answer any questions.
So Wednesday you meet where? Is it predetermined, or you just pick a spot each one?
Out in Kahuku. If they send you an email
mm-hmm.
that they would like information, we have to be careful. Because it's an attorney-client meeting,
right?
Who actually comes? But if they could put their questions to you, we'll be happy to get responses back through the clients.
Okay.
Just quickly, one more
thing.
Ahead. There was another family just before me that was evicted also, and they have no known of where their things went.
No knowledge.
Nothing. Nothing. The one more thing that I want to point out, our declarations from our people that witness these things happening is from testimonies from their own selves, from mm-hmm. their own voices and hearts and whatever. The testimonies that was prepared by Lex Smith is so repetitious. It's everything says the same thing. The catch that I want to put out is saying, mm-hmm. we went in one day, and it took 2 days. When we went back to the second day, I noticed his toolbox was chained to the house and stuff, but when we went back to the second day, it was gone. I recognized the money jar that you talk about for the kids, and the money jar when we went back the second day was gone. If you put it outside the house, you're negligent because you put it outside for somebody to take it. If you put it inside of the house, the thing that I want to point out is they changed my locks, and
right.
they're the only ones who had the keys.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're saying if the money's gone, brother, you stole my money.
Yeah.
Cough it up.
Well, gentlemen, ladies, I thank all of you from the Kahuku Plantation Residents Association. Please feel free to come again. I'll extend an invite to the mayor, Mr. Lex Smith, and the Continental and any other entity involved in this to appear on the Carol Cox Show. We'll give you equal time. So please feel free to call 782-6627. And again, I want to thank you all and Tony for you calling and giving me the information and introducing me to this situation. So next week we're going to be talking about ADA mats. Some of you people out there that not familiar with this, something has come bothering me about the visually impaired people or pedestrians. Did you know the yellow mats that look as though braille along the state highways and should be in the city, some of them are crumpled and wrinkled, and some of them guide the parties relying on these signs or these stickers on the ground, lead them right into traffic. So this is going to be a pretty interesting situation. But again, just take notice. If you see any yellow mats at any intersection or crosswalk, they are set up for the visually impaired. And believe it or not, it's dangerous. So we're going to talk about it. You can see some of the pictures at carolcox.com. And thank you and aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.